Hello, everyone, and welcome to the YJBM Science News Podcast, where we discuss the most recent science news from across the Yale community. I'm Samantha, first-year Master of Public Health student in the Department of Health Policy.
And I'm Mara, second-year PhD student in the Department of Microbiology. Our sound is a little bit different. That's because we're recording over Zoom, and Yale's spring break is about to start, so we're doing our last one before spring break. Then we're probably going to be gone for a week or two. But then we'll be back with more research to share with you.
Yeah, I know you're going to miss us, but contain your sadness. It's only 2 short weeks, and then we'll be back. So, Laurel, what do you have for us today?
So, the first article that got my attention was just published in Science, and it focuses on innate immune defenses that can be used in cell against intracellular bacteria. And before we jump into it, a couple things to establish and remind you about how immune system works. Especially when it comes to bacteria, they can be extracellular, so residing outside of our cells, like in the blood or in joints, anywhere else. Or some of them penetrate and go inside the cell and then establish culture in there. So, as you can imagine, it's harder to catch a bacteria that goes inside the cell, and cell needs to figure out how to fight off this invader. Now, we do have many, many different defenses against those. However, the ones that researchers wanted to focus on were those complexes that actually form on the surface of pathogen itself. So basically, immune system and defense system of the cell will see the bacteria and then establish its molecular mechanisms of defense, this base, right on its surface, covering it completely. So researchers wanted to see how exactly this process goes and what it looks like, because there have been no visualization of it. They used a bacteria called Salmonella enterica and a specific type of it that causes T5. And what they did is that they just used cryo electron microscopy to go in there and visualize what exactly is happening at different time points of infection.
And what did they observe?
So they really observed exactly what they wanted to see. They observed the picture of what's happening. And the big player here in this process is what we call GBPs, or granulate binding proteins, which were actually discovered by the same lab of John McMaking, a while ago, I think a decade ago. They discovered those proteins. So we knew kind of what they were doing, those proteins, what function they had, how did they enhance the defense against intracellular bacteria. However, we did not know exactly how they do it, because at the time when they were discovered, traditional methods of microscopy, such as light microscopy and different forms of it, this kind of method just can't see to a really, really small scale. It has its limit, which is light refraction length limit. So nowadays, we can use what's called cryo-electron microscopy, where samples are frozen to like a very frozen state. There is a stable state. And then electron microscopy doesn't rely on light. It relies on rays of electrons. And then computer interprets the picture as an output. And I really highly recommend going to the link for this paper, which we will, as always, drop in description, and seeing the visualizations that they got, because it is beautiful. It shows the whole coat of this protein as it covers the bacterium. And they also say that it's a process that happens very fast. So as soon as cell detects the bacterium, the amplification of GBPs starts happening. And they're saying that in a few minutes, tens of thousands of those molecules of this protein start covering the surface of bacteria and just covers it completely. And that's where it establishes the base for further immune response and signaling and just downstream effects.
Sorry, it's just funny. If you're so into the visualization, that's so cute. Anyway, I'm gonna go and take a look. It looks really cool, actually. Okay, I will. How can this be used in therapeutics?
Well, apart from establishing some novel understanding of details of immune response, I think it really opens possibilities for enhancement of this response, because after all, like, yes, we have synthetic molecules, we have so many different therapeutic methods, but the most efficient ones are the ones that use the responses that we already have in our systems and just modulating them to either increase the effect or decrease the effect. And in this case, this is another mechanism of immune system that we can use for our purposes to fight against different diseases, potentially, in the future.
That's really cool. Thanks for sharing.
Okay, Sam, what's your first article about?
So basically, the point of the study was to develop stronger resources for the development of personalized treatment in psychiatric care. So in pursuit of addressing the limitations preventing that type of innovation, just because it's really hard to develop personalized psychiatric care when, you know, your models are maybe not picking up, you know, the predictions quite well enough. So basically, in pursuit of addressing those limitations, researchers at Yale have developed a new generative modeling framework to improve predictions surrounding the relationship between multiple neural readings and patient symptoms. And the hope is that this will help with establishing good findings in patient-specific treatments.
I see. So how exactly did they develop this tool?
Basically, researchers from Yale and the University of Nottingham employed Dr. Marcus Helmer's statistic generative model that, like, this model gives you the size of a data set needed to properly determine how brain signals relate to behavior in various individuals. So they use this model to examine neuroimaging data from two very large neuroimaging psychometric data banks. And what they found from that was that they were able to create reliable associations between multiple neural regions and multiple behavioral traits. But this requires as many as 10,000 study subjects.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So why is this new statistical model important?
The benefits of this model, which is now marketed through the startup Manifest Technologies, which was started by the primary researchers for the paper, is that it can help drug companies with their studies when designing clinical trials for psychiatric conditions and make sure that their findings, based on how large the data set is, make sure that their findings are actually, you know, accurate and reliable.
I see. That makes sense. Yeah.
Moving on to our next study. What is it about, Mara?
Yeah, so this study was also published in a top-tier journal. This one was published in Nature, and it is coming from a lab of Eric Song, who is a new PI here in immunology. And they focused on the connection between eye and the brain and how it comes in terms of immunology and also drug development.
How did they investigate this problem?
So the question that they were asking is, okay, so we know that brain is kind of a secluded, both immunologically and physiologically, system, right? And yes, it is hard for diseases to get in there, but if they develop there, it's hard to treat. For example, any kind of bacterial infection, antibiotic delivery to brain is going to be hard. Or any kind of like viral encephalitis or tumors. It is a secluded environment, which is the bottom line. And we don't really have a good way of connecting to it. And then we're still discovering the immunological axis that leads to the brain. So they try to go in a little bit different perspective about it, and they focus on the eye, which is neurologically connected to the brain. So what exactly they did is they immunized the space behind the eye, basically, against herpes simplex virus in mice, which can cause encephalitis. And the mice that did have this space immunized, they also were somewhat immunized against this virus in their brain. So when they were exposed to it, they did not get disease as much as mice regularly would. Which means that we can use this axis to deliver either immunizations or some kind of drugs into the brain space. And they also tried it with bacteria. And what's more interesting, they also tried it against tumors. So they were able to prevent and target the tumor in the brain by targeting it from the eye.
That's really cool. So what are the potential applications of this?
Well, I feel like I've listed already quite a few because it's a very application-based study, at least the way it seems. But really, we're talking about drug delivery systems, immunization systems, And just expanding our understanding of what, like, what is the connection between the brain and different other parts of the neurological system. Because when it comes to the eye, they also saw a difference for when they treated the, like, anterior part and posterior part. And they have different, like, lymphatic drainage. Those parts have different immunological connections overall. Like, with posterior being more connected to the brain. So I feel like there's a lot more research needed to go into this area, but it's really exciting to see the establishment of our understanding of the system already.
That's really cool. Thank you.
Yeah, so Sam, let's finish up with our fourth article. What do you have for us?
Okay, so this one was done by researchers at the Yale School of Public Health, which makes me very excited because that's the school at Yale that I'm part of. School of Public Health represent, and it looks at the mental health impact of early retirement on blue-collar workers versus white-collar workers. And this is specifically for females. Looking at metrics such as the rate of hospitalization for mental illness post-retirement. And this is because the researchers acknowledge that retirement is a major life transition and can have consequences on mental health and well-being. Effects of retirement on mental health could include elimination of stress and time for other activities. However, depending on the worker's financial situation, this could also alternatively mean lower income, social isolation, caregiving burdens, and other potentially harmful consequences that could damage mental health.
Interesting. So what did this study find?
Well, first of all, let's talk about when the retirement age is for urban women in China, which is age 50 for blue-collar workers and age 55 for white-collar workers. And, I mean, this is shocking for me as an American because I often think that that's the age when I'll be hitting my professional peak. But anyway, this paper studied urban female workers, white-collar and blue-collar, who submitted medical claims to the Urban Employee Medical Insurance, which is available to formerly employed people and which affords better benefits to its beneficiaries post-retirement. So using this data, which ranged from 2017 to 2019 for nearly a million females, the researchers used a regression discontinuity design to examine the disparities in mental illness-related hospital admissions between blue-collar workers and white-collar workers. And what they concluded was that the impact of retirement was most important for blue-collar workers, as they were the only group to exhibit a notable increase in mental illness admissions after retirement, as evidenced by a 16.6% increase in ER admissions. So the study posits that this could be the result of worsening mental health among blue-collar workers post-retirement, as well as better insurance coverage after retirement and granting more access to resources, which they have more time to access now that they are no longer working. The only categories in which white-collar workers were shown to have increases in mental illness post-retirement were schizophrenia, schizotypal, and delusional disorders, which could likely be the result of having worked high-stress jobs but having had more consistent access to mental health resources during their career thanks to higher earnings.
Interesting. I've actually never even thought of that problem. I guess because it feels like retirement is so far off in the future. But overall, yeah. Do you know if there's any research going on like this for United States population? Or what do you think will be harder to do because the retirement age is not as consistent?
I don't know. I don't know of any studies being done in the U.S. I wouldn't be surprised if there were. But as you say, I think that it would be very difficult to do this research in the U.S. because the retirement age is so inconsistent, and also because I think it would be harder to gather the claims data since health insurance is so varied within the U.S. between, you know, whether you're on government insurance, like you're on Medicaid or Medicare for the elderly, and then, you know, thinking about, okay, are you, you know, contracted through the private insurance providers, you actually just legitimately have private insurance that is not, you know, contracted through the government, and just like a bunch of different things. Like, do you have Advantage? Do you have traditional? It's like the health insurance landscape in the U.S. is quite complicated. And I think that looking at claims data would be quite interesting, considering also the fact that, like, formal employment in the U.S. doesn't necessarily mean that you have health insurance, but health insurance is largely tied to formal employment in the U.S. It's very complicated. I think it would be quite difficult to do a really very fairly representative study of this in the U.S.
No, that makes sense. This could be why they chose not to do it in the U.S. in the first place. I don't know about background of this research and researchers themselves. It's really interesting to have a cleaner cohort. And yeah, let's see what kind of changes in public health approaches can we draw from this.
Absolutely. I'm actually, like, I found this research to be very interesting. And I know that it's not generalizable from China to the U.S., but I enjoyed it nonetheless. Saddened by it, but interesting to read.
Yeah, of course. Okay, Sam, I think we can wrap it up here. It was great being here today with you guys. And as I said earlier, please pop in the description, check out the links for the studies. I'm sure you will find something interesting there for you to read as well. And with that, we will leave you for the next 2 weeks. And then we'll be back just as usual.
Have a great break. And we will see you again soon. Bye.